Here we are on the ninth day of Christmas. It corresponds to the month September. We like the whole 12 days of Christmas. So we are honoring Calliope emerging from the cauldron of calamity. And I was looking up Calliope. Her name means beautiful voiced from the Greek word kalos and ops, particularly pertinent to our wonderful guest. Calliope was the chief of the nine muses, the ancient Greek goddesses of music, song, and dance, and the goddess of eloquence, mother of the bard Orpheus. So as the new Congress convenes, and may it be in all realms, so do we, to reunite all that has been sundered, whereby to reweave the participatory fabric of creation back together. And Calliope's guiding of governance is auspicious. It said that she would guide governors to be wise in heart, because when the people are being misguided in their assembly, they set right the matter again with ease, persuading them with gentle words. Such is the holy gift of the muses to men. We go, oh, that's good. Okay, we are here to re-wed music and medicine. We might say that the ancient mind peers at modern mind going, modern mind, what are you talking about that there's healing over there and art over there? What are you talking about? You cannot have one without the other. So how perfect today that we are honoring, we are honoring technology. So we are honoring the re-wedding to music as medicine. We welcome the return of Donatella Moltisanti, whose name by itself is beautiful, with her collaborative ally in sound healing, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, together in this hour and in unfurling events in the Bay Area that we will announce through the rewedding of music and medicine. We may transform our own imprisoning traumatic damage into liberating collaborative healing of our personal, social, and environmental realms. May it be so. So Donatella Moltisanti is a naturally gifted healer with a music conservatory degree in opera performance and teaching. She's the founder of Moltisanti's Soul Healing Method, which she will speak more about. And Dr. Kenneth Pelletier is a pioneering integrative medicine ally and an international best-selling author. He serves as a clinical professor at UCSF Medical School and as a medical consultant to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. May they listen to you, the World Health Organization, the Federation of State Medical Boards. So welcome, Donatella.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so, so excited and honored to be taking this place where the ancient goddesses are, you know, so much of your attention and consciousness.
Well, I love that Calliope means beautiful voice, and that's part of your dedication.
Yes.
And welcome, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to this.
That's wonderful. Well, there's so many places to go. We certainly want to also let it be known about your events in the Bay Area. Can music change your genes? And we can, you know, keep announcing this. Kenneth Pelletier, author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, that I've been reading quite a lot of. I have copious notes. There we go. And we will interweave between the two of you collaborators. That's great. But you're doing something on February 6th from 7 to 9 at Unity Church of San Leandro. We will have it listed on your websites, again, drpelletier.com and also donatellamoltisanti.com and also Coyote Network News. So that will be announced out there. So that's great. And are you both meeting now? Is this the time of your meeting for your collaboration?
Yes. So exciting.
We love that.
As worked for many years, so this is, for me, a great pleasure.
That's wonderful. Because just a few broad themes, and then again, we can all, each one of you, we can go anywhere we need to. But, you know, restoring intimacy and cooperation to the world, it's like the more we know, the more we are ever expanding our vocabulary and our metaphoric agility, the more we expand our capacity to intimately cahoot. And when we get to diet in your book, Dr. Pelletier, going, all right, the more variety of healthy foods, and you know, it strengthens our capacity to collaborate with everything. And Donatella, might you also say that the more variety and expansiveness of the music that we hear also?
Yeah. Also, is the expansion, voice and sound, it brings an expansion. It's really, when we talk about voice, it's our own voice. It's the voice of our own body, our organs, our feelings. So to take a voice, to give voice to so much of what we believe in, instead of taking all this concept in a state of expansion.
Ah, right. And might we also say, you know, it's like there was a study done in Scandinavia about children growing up without computers before the age of 8, and they perceived, you know, 500 colors in nature. And kids growing up with computers before the age of 8 perceived 100, right? So a tremendous diminution. Yeah. And we might, you know, to both of you, by analogy, say the diminution, you know, of variety, you know, whether it's that was, you know, colors, but also we could do tastes and food and sounds, right? We want to expand our intimacy with a wide range of sounds and complex rhythms. Donatella, how... I know you'll be teaching with Dr. Pelletier, and also on your own, can you guide us into just a little bit of that?
Sure.
The sound healing part, yeah.
So the sound healing part is something that has been growing inside of me for a long time, and as I take it out and experience with a group of people. As you know, we have been doing this for a while now. We're going to meet communities of people that are amazingly ready to let this idea of using sound for them to be able to go inside their body and not to be kicked out, or, you know, music that takes you outside your body, or even in the past, in memories, but it's very hard to go inside our body, to be in touch with ourselves, or what is our body's intelligence is telling us, what is that, who we are today, what we want for today to go on. And the sound used as an element that opens doors that are being shut down for so long, for such a long time. And it's really amazing to see how effective and how passionate people become in this event, because what happens is that one thing that I always, as you were mentioning tons of colors for children, a practice I did lately the past few years were in my travels or whatever, I found myself walking in the woods, was to go closer to huge trees, small trees, different shapes of trees, and look for the tuning of the tree, like the sound of the ocean, the sound of the waves. There is one vibration that's constant in every being. And so I would really curiously put my ear on the tree bark and feel the tuning, and my mind would come up with a note, and then I would check with my little application, and the note was matching. So what happens is that I do tune into the tune that the audience creates, but also in the tune that everybody has and brings, like every tree has its own intonation. And then when the sound healing experience starts, the voice, my channeling, my vocalization, that is very similar to Gregorian chants. It's a very... It plays all my background of music training. And so there is such a natural way to tune into these sounds that people express and then manifesting them. I had people, there was a lady in one of my events that was saying, I am a practitioner, and she's an acupuncturist, and there is always a song in my head that plays when I work. I've never heard this song anywhere, but I have always this melody that plays in my head, and you sang this melody today. And she was my first role attainment. So I was like, yes, that was your song. And so it's so amazing to be able to take people to their own sound, and also their own experience becomes a journey within themselves. And it's a very deep self-discovery journey that it's so unique. Like the person close to them has a completely different journey. So using sound in such a direct but profound way and personal way, it has been really magical, and a magical experience.
Ooh, yeah, I will telepathically attend. You know, that's so wonderful. And many acousticians, our own great friend of show, Michael Stocker, marine acoustician, says, you know, our species, we are a chorusing species. And in a sense, what we're also addressing is, you know, healing our loneliness and, you know, with kinship of our species to participate in the whole big thing, which is part of it. And then, Dr. Kenneth Belladier, you know, that in your book and also the article that I'd serendipitously been reading, Epigenetics, the Evolution Revolution, you know, it speaks about how damaging childhood trauma, say, separating children from their parents, is in a long-term way. And I was thinking of both of you and the beautiful, dedicated work that you're doing and proffering in the Bay Area, and we want to amplify that more and more. But I was also thinking, you know, that there is a remedy, right? There is a remedy for this, you know, incredible harm that our government has done to children and parents at the border with long-term implications, and then also children and, you know, the role of war and famine and all of those things to have long-lasting epigenetic effects. And then what your book and what both of you are dedicated to is, and how can we remedy that it's not fated? So, Dr. Belladier, when I was reading that, I was going, oh, and might you and Donatella, you know, might there be concerts on the border? Might there be, you know, detention centers opened, of course. But, I mean, do you feel moved to bring the music and healing into these areas of acute harm?
It's not something I've ever thought of, but there's no question about the irreparable harm that is being perpetrated on these children. At minimum, they're under extreme stress, separation from the mother, certainly, and separation from the father has dramatic negative impacts on their genes, their blood chemistry, their intestinal tract, their emotional health and well-being. And, you know, if we recognize that and if we address it through music, through healing, through therapies, through love and kindness and restoring them to their rightful families, then this doesn't have to be irreparable. But right now, the way it's being handled, there are 500 or 600 children still separated from their parents, and that's going to have major negative consequences on their future health and well-being, emotionally, physically, and in terms of their general life expectancy. This is probably the most traumatic possible event that could occur for these children, even for their parents for that matter, but certainly for the children.
Yeah, and increased rates of suicide, schizophrenia, I mean, all kinds of these permanent things. And of course, we want to critique and then both of you to proffer, you know, the antidote. And, you know, I like that you said, I've never thought of that before. And we go, that's what this show is for. So, you know, we just want to sort of tease forth implications out there. And, the childhood adversity and the epigenetic basis for diseases caused by, you know, famine and economic deprivation and war. And then, you know, you dive into the many things. But I love that, you know, in your book and honoring the work of Dr. David Perlmutter as well, you go, dementia is neither inevitable nor genetic. Because part of the dedication of your book and your collaboration with Donatella is that it is not fated. You know, the DNA, I guess, discovered in 1953, and then it was the sequencing in 2001, mapping the language of the double helix, and so you can guide us into that. At first it was like fated, and you can find what markers you have for what diseases, but you're going, no, nothing fated, right?
Yes, that's a very good description. I think the most common misconception about genetics is that it's like the hard drive in a computer, which is a set of rules, laws that are invariant and inflexible, and what we're born with is what we're fated to have for our entire life. And that was a gross misunderstanding and gross misconception until about 10 years ago. And then we began to realize that, no, the gene is actually invariant. It does not change except if you have radiation or petrochemical exposure, like from insecticides. But what does change is its expression. So whether or not it becomes active and the extent to which it becomes active, that's what we're really concerned about. That's what epigenetics is. So epi is above, beyond, surrounding, or around. They're all of the influences that occur on the gene to express or suppress it. That's what governs our states of health and wellness, even our life expectancy. It's highly programmable by what we do into the future in terms of our life expectancy. That is not fixed in our genetic code by any sense. There are probably 5 to 8% of the genetic code is fixed. And if it's a disease code, that will show up within the first 8 to 9 months of life. If it doesn't show up at that point, the rest of our 95% genetic expression is epigenetic and occurs by everything we do from that point on throughout our life. And one of the things I admire about Donatella's work is that it's her voice that provides security, that provides healing, provides impact for the people that listen, but it's also her invoking people to find their own voice, their own internal expression of both trauma and hope, that I think is the essence of healing.
Beautiful. And I was thinking, Donatella, too, just in a musical reverie on occasion, going, ooh, you know, that even grief expressed as art becomes a sacrament of kinship, that when we have that beautiful music of yearning and uplift, it really is all-inclusive to, you know, everyone on the border or in difficult circumstances, right? I mean, do you find that also? Does that resonate with yourself about grief expressed as art becomes kinship?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, great.
Well, does it?
Yes, definitely. I want to also reinforce what Dr. Pelletier was saying, because my mother and her sisters, they were also having chronic pains around their period. And I saw my mother really excruciating pains going up. I didn't know what it was. And then when it hit me at 13, I was thinking, oh, of course, this is her structure. That's how her body works. That's how my body works. I felt that I was condemned to have the same pains every month. And because I changed something, I introduced something in my routine that was really awareness about my breathing and the muscles. And really what happened was my vagus nerve was being stimulated and calmed down, and everything was being restructured. It was reawakening the expression of my body structure in a completely different way. And because of that, I always believed in this. I really feel, and I always said without knowing, that one day it will be scientifically supported, that we have, at least we have, I would say to my little children, I was teaching them, and I was saying, you have 75% it's in your hands. I understand that there's a lot going on. Like, I was teaching at a young child that was teaching violin at that time, and she was left-handed, so she felt doomed. I cannot play violin because I'm left-handed. Everybody was telling her that. And then she was also tuned it. And it was like, no, we can change this. We can change this. And she became such an amazing violinist. She's actually playing violin in my city. And she plays all over the world. And she has a perfect pitch. And she came out from being tuned deaf. So really, I never believed in what it was given to us. And that was it. I added that curiosity and playfulness and hopeness. You know, there was so much in me that was like, no, let's figure out. And so, yes, I went through so many, so much pain and so much transformation. This is not something that's very front line, but I am survivor of domestic violence, and that's the reason why I left my country and I came here, because I really ran from my life. And I started to work with volunteering in a center of domestic violence in Miami at that time. And I was healing the women through singing and breathing. I was teaching them breathing and to take, I knew what was the paralyzation of being in a state of terror. And I healed my own perception of life and men. And also I saw these women completely, like overnight, understanding the power, awakening the power inside and go for it. And I remember after 1 year that I was there, and they took me on just to volunteer, and we had this beautiful concert with the mayor and everything. And I was really the voice that taught women, that represented women, to not be survivors anymore, to just go back to life, stop being a survivor. So, yes. And also the topic of the children, for me, as you know, so particularly important, because when I work with people, and it's the memory of the when the tissues have issues, you know, when the memory is locked in the muscles, it's locked in the fear, in the emotional sadness and grief, and that, you know, we as a society are kind of ashamed to express strong emotion. So we were more taught to repress it and to formulate in a very decent way, and that really keeps them stuck inside. But most often it's the inner child, it's the memory of the experience that happened when you are a teenager, when you're a child, when you don't have the language, you don't have the means to express. And so the body keeps holding in until it becomes a rotten container. And so the sickness and the, you know, anything it comes along, and you are just manifesting what you are holding inside. So working with children is my most important, most my heart really beats very hard when I work with children. I do work with parents because I want to really teach parents how important it is to understand the language with kids, use the sound. You know, one thing that I want to do is to, I do have a lullaby in my CD, but my next CD will be lullabies for children. And right now, there are tons of children that use my music to become children again. So this is really something that gives me a lot of joy.
And also in Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier's book there, with a foreword by Andy Weil, there, Dr. Andrew Weil, there, all teams are reuniting. That's really great. But also the harm that can be done, and then also the remedy to embryos, to fetuses as well, and then the healing effect of music as well as the environment, all of that. And I love what you said, you know, both of you dedicated to that, you know, we are not fated. There is no fixed future model. It's like when beautiful Lily Yeh was working in the Dandelion School for the Children of Migrant Workers. This one 12-year-old girl said, "Since Lily guided me to my own creativity, I am no longer willing to accept the fate that was assigned me." Woof, right? And that's what you're doing, Dr. Pelletier, really, right? Which is that no, this is not a fated assignment. This is something to cooperate with in myriad forms. You mentioned that, you know, meditation, actually, there's somebody in your book who could endure great pain in I guess a concentration camp, and normally he was whatever, but when he went into a meditative state, what he could endure, and it had very little harm. Am I quoting correctly from your book?
Yes, actually, that was one of the earliest influences on my research and looking at the healing of body mind and the use of music and sound. He was a Dutch meditator. I had been a resistance fighter during World War II, captured, was in a concentration camp, and he was being tortured. And when he fainted from the pain of torture, he had a vision. And when he came out of the vision, he said to the guard who was torturing him, "I love you." And at that point, they thought he was completely crazy and left him alone. But he found out from that point on, he had this remarkable ability to control bleeding and pain and infection. And so I, in the mid-70s, actually, had been to Greece and witnessed some rather remarkable events on the island of Tinos, which has a chapel that for the Greek Orthodox is like Lourdes for the Christian faith, but it's a place where miracles occur. And I saw people that were in excruciating pain, who were pain-free, that had limbs that were gnarled, who were able to move and walk and balance. So I knew that something was different. Something was going on than the biological reductionism that medicine teaches. And so in my research, what I did is I invited in a group of maybe seven or eight, I think, what we called adept meditators. And they were people who could inflict extreme pain. In the case that of Jack Schwartz, who's the man I'm referring to in the concentration camp, he would put a sharpened bicycle spoke entirely through his bicep and out the other side. Now, this is a don't do this at home. There's a major artery there, and you don't want to hit it, although on occasion he did when he demonstrated this. And then when he was not meditating, he felt pain. He bled within normal bleeding time, et cetera, just like all of us. But when he was meditating, he looked as though he was on a beach and having a perfectly good time. And so the lesson of that was that in his mind, he was able to enter a state that permitted him to regulate the pain, regulate the bleeding, the electromagnetic activity of his muscles, of his brain, of his respiration, of his heart rate and regularity. All of these variables were entirely within his means to change, to regulate in a positive direction. So fast forward to the present time, what I see the epigenetics revolution being about is that now we're realizing not only on the level of organs and bodies and nervous system and bloodstream, but at the level of the gene, that we are literally through the same kind of internal states that are achieved through music, through meditation, we're able to self-regulate even at the level of the single cell in a human organism. I think that, to me, is astounding. I think one last thing that might really link with Donatella's work is that I think we're a misconception as we think of ourselves as a nervous system and organs inside a body, as a solid mass. And in reality, that's not accurate at all. We are really bioelectromagnetic systems. We're highly permeable. We're giving off frequencies all the time. One of the most intense frequencies emitted from the human body is around the human heart. We are susceptible to all forms of electromagnetic emissions. And so we really are a swim in an ocean of energy, an ocean of sound, an energy of music. So that's who we really are. And we're beginning to recognize that. And we have ultrasonography with the heart. We have lithotripsy for using sound to dissolve kidney stones. So we have some relatively crude medical interventions based on sound. But I think what Donatella does and what she's describing is the healing power of music, of chant, of the opera, of her voice. And I'm in awe of that, quite honestly. I think it's quite astounding.
That's great. And you know, I went to a presentation that Dr. Francis Collins, director of NIH, gave at the Kennedy Center with some musicians on music and healing. And he did start off by saying, when we hear beautiful music, such as Donatella creates and inspires, that gives us kind of goosebumps, the brain releases a downsurge of dopamine, you know. And I was thinking of all the Parkinson's and all the friends who'd had Parkinson's. And then he showed a video of a man with advanced Parkinson's who could barely walk and barely open the door. And then all they did was put on a metronome, tick, 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 and he could walk and open the door and all those things. And we go, ooh, marvels. There's so many marvels here. And then just to go back to weave between the two of you, you know, fate versus artful collaboration, no fixed future. Our word stamina comes from stamen, not the flower, but it's the length of our fate that the fates weave for us. And the word means we don't have to accept that. We get handed our DNA, you know, the length that the fates weave for us, and we can stretch it out and strengthen it, right? And both of you are, you know, interested in that, going, how do we cooperate to increase our stamina, our length of life in so many beautiful ways? So, and to-ing and fro-ing, feel free, but, you know, in your book, there's a great deal of practicality, change your genes, change your life. You go through inflammation, food, environment. People are always eager for that, you know, and the importance of the microbiome and all and food. But is there any way you want to do a brief list of, can you sing, perhaps? Can you sing the beneficial foods for us?
Yeah, I wish I could, but certainly Donatella can.
Well, do you want to, well, you can chant or yes, however we want to. Like, wait, I wrote them down from
well,
some crucial
things. The best I could do is which I'm better at doing is the site of study, which I think is fascinating. That's not in my book. It came out about 6 months ago, so just after I finished the book. But Ancestry, which is the company that creates Ancestry.com, worked with a British university, and they actually assembled into a gigantic database all of the genetic information that Ancestry has collected, and they created a family tree of over 400 million people. 400 million people. Now, most research has a database of 100 people, maybe 1,000, but 400 million is unheard of. And what they wanted to ask one simple question. They said, does the life expectancy of the grandparents or parents predict the life expectancy of the offspring? Or, and they looked at a number of psychosocial factors like diet, exercise, emotional stability, stress, environmental quality. Or did those variables predict the life expectancy, the length of life, the longevity of the grandchildren? And overwhelmingly, the lifestyle factors predicted accurately the likelihood of a genetic predisposition by the grandparents being manifested in the grandchildren. The genetic factor alone did not predict longevity of these individuals. Now, that's an astounding finding that really emphasizes the fact that we are not, you know, we're not genetically programmed one way or the other, that there's a tremendous malleability through everything that you've suggested, through diet, exercise, nutrition, the physical environment, the emotional environment. We've been talking about the stress of, in Donatella's case, of domestic violence and of the violence done to children at the border. That has extremely deleterious impact through stress and its effects on the body, on the genetic expression, but it's preventable. And even when it occurs, we can then take steps once we recognize it to alter it, to offset it, to basically rise above the challenge and the disability into a state of health. Again, as Donatella described and some of the people that she's worked with, you do see these seemingly miraculous occurrences. But if you think about it and you think about this bioelectromagnetic system with strong beliefs and hope and altruism and resilience and all of these factors you're beginning to understand and research, you understand that miracles are not miracles and except they're exceptions and maybe they're unusual, but it's not miraculous. It's in the realm of understanding and it's in the realm of modern science.
Right. We're going to take a very, very short musical break in a moment, too. But there was also, I was mesmerized. We blew past the half hour, but we're going to have a very short break. Our wonderful guests are Donatella Moltisanti and Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. We will announce after break the events they're doing in the Bay Area. And then just to put there, too, because there's also an astounding about, you know, twins have the same genetic, you know, assignment, and you say that if one twin gets a particular disease, I guess it was different with cancer and the other disease, but the other twin's likelihood of getting the disease was as low as 5% in some cases, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. All right, we're going to come right back on that, our wonderful guest, and here is our short musical break, and we'll be right back, team.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tallest cry. Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our perfect for now guests are Donatella Moltisanti. I like to think of her as an agent of the muse Calliope, whose name means beautiful voiced, and so is Donatella. And with her collaborative ally in sound healing, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. And they will be doing some events in the Bay Area, everything listed on their websites, which is DonatellaMoltisanti.com and also, and also Dr. Pelletier with two L's.com and also on my website, CoyoteNetworkNews.com under the radio listing. But let us pour forth that you will be doing something on February 6th together, right? February 6th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Unity Church of San Leandro. Donatella, what will you be doing with Dr. Ken?
Our collaboration born from both our passion in awakening people to their own power and curiosity about who they are, besides where their past is, where their ancestors' history is, what, like, really become curious about knowing who they are, transforming who they are, which then Dr. Pelletier will so beautifully explain in a scientific way, or way to eat, and you know, how to adopt healthier lifestyles. But this can easily go out of people, so like, oh yeah, I will do that. It's too much work for change. But what we are bringing together is the passion to know yourself, the passion to really value your life, the passion to not just identify too much with your family, where you come from, what happened to you. What is that you really believe? What is that you want to believe? What is your life want to be? So we both will bring our experiences where we use it as an instrument. And for me particularly is to allow people to experience sound as an agent that brings into that, as you're saying, the stamina, that inner channel, that is the inner emotions, the part of ourselves that we don't know what to do. You know, like some people say, you know, what I do when I get angry and I don't know how to handle my anger, or when I get depressed and it takes away my life. People become powerless to their own feelings. So give them an idea, hope, perspective that they can be in charge of their lives. So there is a passion that needs to be reborn so that people get in charge of their health and their destiny.
Beautiful.
So in a practical side, we're going to do singing bowls. It's like a meditative concert where people are invited to breathe. One thing that I introduce that is as a great success, I talk a lot about conscious breathing, which is a method that I put down in a very simple but methodical way so that people can apply this incredible technique that ancient Italian singers use and spread throughout the world. And I take it to the people, that they don't need to go and study and sing a song to understand how the diaphragm can activate the vagus nerve, the deep breath, velar section, inner connection, and then a sense of well-being, a sense of calmness in a very short time. So the sound and breathing and mental preparation, state of mind through Dr. Pelletier knowledge, that is amazing. The way he takes very important, complex and medical concepts into a space that is understandable by everyone, and it's knowledge of spirit and vibration and the sound, it's unbelievable. It's like really a dream to collaborate with him.
Beautiful. Yeah, and is there anything more that you want to add, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life? You're opening the discussion at this event to guide us into epigenetics, yeah?
Well, I would just underscore the word that Donna Talley used, which is passion, and to be able to ignite a passion and a certainty in people that they can make a difference. There's a wonderful old black and white interview with the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung at the end of his life, and the interviewer asks him, do you believe in God? And Jung looks over his spectacles and straight at the camera, and he says, I don't believe, I know. And I think that kind of passion and the kind of certainty we're trying to evoke in people, it's not to intellectually think, oh, I think I can change my life or I can make a difference. It's to know that you can, and through genetic testing and through some other, you know, methods that people can experience their ability. You can change your diet. You can change your sleep patterns, your response to stress. You can change your environment. You can change your interaction with everyone around you. And each of these things may sound relatively small, but each of them cumulatively make a huge difference. And I think just to kind of underscore something that Donatella was saying earlier, you know, music and its impact on humanity and on health has been with us literally for thousands of years. We have, you know, my introduction to Gregorian chanting was as a French Catholic altar boy in Rhode Island, and first hearing that and being transported by it, and then realizing that the Ayurvedic chanting of India, the boys' choir of Westminster Abbey, the Tibetan Book of the Dead that got out to Buddhist monks, the Navajo Diné chants. All of these have existed for hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, before there was any, quote, science to explain it. And I'm the last person in the world to reduce the beauty, the elegance, the majesty, the power of a voice like Donatella and its impact on people to simple biochemistry. I think it's fascinating that it shows up in the physical and that we have explanatory models that describe the science of the impact, but one is not reducible to the other. I still get chills when I hear chanting or when I hear Donatella's voice because it's moving in a way that intellectually is difficult to describe. Every meditative tradition has ascribed wisdom to the heart, and I think all of us, when we listen to great music, opera, classical music, even great contemporary music, have a feeling in our hearts. And it's a feeling of passion, of love, of serenity. And that's, I think, what the common point that brings Donatella's work and my work close together.
Beautiful. Well, let's let the audience know how they can participate, which is I know that February 6th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Unity Church of San Leandro, 13909 East 14th Street, San Leandro, California. You will be presenting and collaborating, just as you say, and with the specific application of music as medicine, guiding Donatella will guide participants through a profoundly healing journey combining operatic vocalization, crystal singing bowls, and guided meditation. Yum! You know, and how wonderful, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, that, you know, again, yes, that science and art and music and beauty being re-wed, from their false sundering, that science is no longer the enemy of beauty and art. I have important medical orthodox people in my family who still think that the idea of, you know, the mind and body connected are a little sketchy. But we go, no, never mind that. Or as Steve Behrman says, sure, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? Well, now it does, thanks to Dr. Kenneth Pelletieri. It also works in theory. There we go. But I just wanted to bring up, for all people dedicated to, you know, being activists or whatever word one wants to use, which is, you know, when I was in South Africa and wonderful guy Ishmael insisted I go to Robben Island, and he said, you will feel the spiritual technology that Nelson Mandela and his colleagues had to create to survive. And when I got back, he said, well, you know, did you feel it? And I go, well, I was wondering on that boat, you know, to that rocky island with a life sentence over your head, you know, how you would feel. And he said, Ishmael said, but you know, Nelson and his buddies, they were singing as though it were nothing. And throughout their 28 years of imprisonment, they were singing to keep their kinship and their bodies alive. I go, yeah. So I just wanted to put that into play in this beauty. I was just looking up quirky things, right? It's Crick and Watson who sort of saw the DNA dance, right? And I just wanted to put this on our altar of mystery here. Francis Crick was a devotee of the novelist Aldous Huxley, and we are thinking, his wife says, that it was on an LSD. He said, I'm a scientist, it's not a whatever, it's a thinking tool. But it was on LSD that he saw the interweaving serpents of DNA. Is that something that you find interesting, Dr. Pelletier?
No, it's fascinating. I mean, I think the point of insight of scientific discovery is very often in a state of reverie induced by music, induced by visual stimulus, like looking at a fire or a night sky or being on an open ocean. So it's when the mind is able to free itself and to then rearrange the data points that we collect throughout our lives, and suddenly you have a new insight, and that is, in fact, that led to the discovery of the DNA double helix, which is, now we accept it, but at the time, 1954 was a completely unheard of, step or shape to even consider. One of the things that what you just said brought to mind, whenever you're ending a book, there's always a sense of how do I end this? What's the grand finale? What's the drum roll? And there's a study that I want to convey that to me is the essence of epigenesis. When Scott Kelly, who's a U.S. United States astronaut, returned from space, and he had been in the space station for nearly a year, so it was the longest duration space flight. And Scott Kelly has a twin brother who's also an astronaut, Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly is married to Gabby Giffords, who's the U.S. representative who was shot. So when Scott Kelly returned, they had his genetic code before and after his space flight. And what they found was 7% of the expression of his genetic code had changed in a year. Now, that may or may not sound like a lot, but the baseline is that what separates us humans from the chimpanzees is less than 1% expression. So a 7% change in expression is astounding. Now, 6 or 8 months later, they've gone back, retested him, and they found that 3 to 4% of those changes seem to be permanent. Now, what that means, is that good, is that bad? We have no way of knowing. But the fact that in 1 year, under conditions of weightlessness, changes in diet, stress, environmental, psychosocial interaction with the other astronauts, that his genetic code has been altered permanently 4% and on an alterable basis by as much as 7% is astounding. I mean, that underscores how this happens, whether we're aware of it or not. And what we're talking about is there are ways to enhance it through music, through diet, through stress management. We can deliberately enhance those predispositions in a positive direction. Rather than having them happen to us, we can actually govern, elicit, and manage them for optimal health and longevity. To me, that's very exciting.
Yes. No, there's much in your book, Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, again, about what we can do culturally as well, that, you know, food colorings of a toxic nature increase, you know, ADD and hyperactivity, and eliminating those restores things. And I did find my notes from your book about green, and maybe like Tom Lehrer, you can do a song and instead of the elements, you know, green leafy vegetables and beets and bok choy and broccoli and nuts and seeds and garlic and beets and ginger and fish oil and coconut oil and turmeric and resveratrol and quercetin, and then you leave some things open to discussion. You know, small amounts of liquor, red wine, maybe, maybe not. I mean, you are combining many people's, you know, and then Dr. Perlmutter saying no grain, no, and then some people. So it. I think the point you make also, like our affinities, I suppose, with music, Donatella, is that it is customized. Some people do very well on vegan diet. Some people, it's not really in their dynamic. Yeah, and turmeric and resveratrol. Yes, I'm going to the grocery store right after this to restock up on resveratrol and quercetin. That's a good idea, because we can play with these things. But also the music and the bathing in music. So Donatella, there's just so many beautiful spiraling implications of your work and the unfolding collaboration with Dr. Pelletier about. I like you wafting lullabies into the memosphere, you know, into collective group mind, available for download. Because music is invisible, right? So it's always been understood as connecting us to the invisible. Do you think of it as spiraling available blessings into group mind, so it does become available for people in more stressed circumstances? Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Music, sound, has such a intrinsic connection with the brain, the way we are wired, that if we start to come to understanding that we need music, music is a form of food. It's a food for the soul, but it's a food also for the body. So my goal is to make it more clear that entering the body through sound, it's the way that from the body we connect to our deepest meaning, to have a meaning of life, to have a connection with the body that's not just physical, or thinking the body as a material aspect of ourselves, like Dr. Pelletier was explaining, it's really fluid. And sound, we are made of sound. We are, when we, you know, we are inside our mother's bellies, we have. The first contact is the voice of the mother, but it's also the beat of the heart and the rush of the blood. Our world is sound. So to have a moment in our day to stop and be in silence, to find our inner sound, or to choose a sound that takes us in that place, it's hard for us to go inside. It's important to have the right state of mind and the right state of body. So the body becomes such a new dimension. We need to fall in love with our bodies. We need to fall in love with our inner organs. We need to fall in love with our story. We need to heal our story. The sound is the conductor, is the element that takes in and out, that reestablishes, recreates a harmony. So often our body is in disharmony because it, again, stores all that has happened to us. And of course, we can't control or predict everything that happens to us. Most of all, we are not, as children, we are not in charge. And so that's when we store most of our alignments that we need to deal with throughout our lives. So the sound takes us to that space where we're painfully not in charge, and takes us back into harmony. We need to go into the sound that's off, and take it back into a frequency that brings harmony. And it's a meticulous work sometimes, and sometimes it's a happy work, but always brings us to joy. So if we know that we are sound, can you imagine how everything changed? Like smiling is part of being sound. Having joy, breathing optimism, breathing a sense of self-empowerment, that is harmony. So all of this becomes very tangible and very doable if you understand that you can use tools that are available to you.
Beautiful. Yeah, and there was something way back in the midst of many beautiful things that you said. Did you say that, you know, to fall in love with our body and our organs, right? Do you think the liver has a musical preference?
Yes.
Okay. Does your liver love jazz?
A track of the song "Compassion" for our liver.
Oh, that's really good, right? To metabolize the bile, right? Okay, that's good. No, but again, yeah, and so I mean, I don't want to bring us back into pathology necessarily, but there's the toxic mimic, you know. The thing that kind of fills the slot for the authentic, the toxic mimic being imprisoning, and I have a little category, prison masquerading as freedom, but I want to reverse that because there are some music. I do MC at a lot of big festivals on occasion, and some of the music is fantastic, and some of it is very obedience. Dum, 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 dum. And I go, no, that's prison masquerading as freedom, you know, because it fills the slot for, you know, for the liberating complexity rhythms. But we do know, and I think, Dr. Pelletier, you know, that the healthier we are, the more we can discern the toxic mimic going, this music is not music. It's not good for me at all. Let me go over here and listen to Donatella. So right, the more we are healthy following intrinsic guidelines that you're pointing out, what, the more discerning we can be immediately about what's poison and what's tonic? Yeah,
right. Well, if you talk to anyone that is a producer of soundtracks for movies, films, you understand that there are certain musical tones, rhythms that induce fear, anxiety, and have, you know, tremendously negative impact. Fortunately, it's short term for the person watching the movie. But there are other forms of music, like that of Donatella, chant from the Benedictine monks, etc., uplifting. And that's what I think we're really talking about. It's a way to uplift the human spirit, remind us of what is best. And when I was listening to Donatella describing this equilibrium that occurs within individuals, what came to mind for me was the term adaptogen. And adaptogen is
on our way out. I can hear the soundtrack of our exit music all too soon. anyway, it's adaptogens. We'll end with adaptogenic. That's right. And entheo, endogenous, indigenuity rising in all of our souls. Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier and Donatella Moltisanti. And for those of you lucky enough in the Bay Area, you can attend their event. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Thanks so much also to wonderful Board Op Michael Cohn. And thanks again, Dr. Pelletier, wonderful book, Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, and to Donatella. Woof, woof, woof.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank
pleasure.
You.
Yay.